You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to the JRE review for the week of August 9th?
Sure. Yeah, August 9th.
That's it. Well, maybe I should say it for the Monday of that week. It doesn't really matter. If that's the case, then it's the week of the 5th.
5th?
But...
4th? Math.
The podcasts have been unfolding kind of slowly. It's almost like since Joe went away hunting and then to Italy, he's like starting later or he's releasing them later. So we've got two to talk about today, but they are two that are very important to both of us, Mark and I.
Yep.
One more than the other for each. So we've got Jean-Jacques Machado, jiu-jitsu legend, and also the coach of my coach that I train under. And then we got
your
Bernie Sanders one. Yeah, my grand coach. The grandmaster coach. Mm-hmm. I've never met him. I knew he trained Joe. And I think Eddie, too. Eddie Bravo for some time. But very exciting to have him on. I couldn't be more pumped to just hear the history and the breakdown and all the fascinating stuff about this. It's a funny one, Mark, because you know there's other people that do a similar thing, and really all they wanted this week was Chappelle to be on.
I know. And that's all.
It made me laugh because like you and I both do stand up, that we love Chappelle. He is the GOAT. We're huge fans, but there are other great guests that can come on too.
And oh, absolutely.
These two guests were perfect for the week, and just have some patience. Like it's fine. Mm-hmm. People will either get on or they won't, right?
Exactly.
They will either get on or they won't. Yeah. So how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm not hungover. So that's a... I feel like every Monday we record and I'm like hungover. And mainly it's because you and I were drinking on Sunday.
That'd do it. Yeah. That's usually the factor that brings it in.
So I'm good.
It does slow your brain down, too. It's probably better for us to just do the podcasts a bit drunk rather than doing them slightly hungover.
I think that was our best one.
People would get more out of it. A bit of whiskey never hurts.
No, it didn't. Vanilla whiskey. Woo!
A lot of whiskey does hurt, though.
Yeah, it really does hurt. Especially at our age.
Yeah, exactly. So, Mark, you don't train jiu-jitsu.
I don't know
too much about the... What do you know about jiu-jitsu, other than what I rabbit on about all the time?
I know Keanu Reeves learned it in 30 seconds in The Matrix. That's pretty much all I know about jiu-jitsu. I have taken...
I think that was Kung Fu.
Oh, shit. No, but he does say, he's like, jiu-jitsu? I'm going to learn jiu-jitsu?
Nice.
I think that's it. And, you know... No one ever delivered that line better in history. So, I don't know. I have dabbled in the martial arts, and by dabbled, I mean I took karate as a kid. I took it in college, and I think I like took it once after college. And I've three times ascended to the glorious rank of white belt. and I think that's just because I tied my belt correctly. So I don't. But you know, you and I have been in a few scrapes. You know, I've been trained by the streets, as I like to say. But no, I really I don't know fuck all about jiu-jitsu, but so I'll leave this to you. What do you know about jiu-jitsu, Adam? Tell me your experience, please.
Well, I could rabbit on all day, but this conversation with Jean-Jacques was a lot of new information. I didn't know a ton of the history behind how it came about. Obviously, it's fairly new as martial arts go, really. because many of them, you look at karate and taekwondo, they go back a long way, a long way. Now, Joe started with taekwondo, and he was competing nationally, you know, when he was very young, like 19, 20, and was good. It had a ton of power. He had really, he went to a school that focused on like extreme power style kicks, generating as much power as possible. And they had some legends over there. So that was a big thing that I've always heard on his podcast is like immediately he trained with some of the best people in the country. And that's how he became quickly one of the best people for his age in the country. Could he have done it anyway at a regular school? Maybe, sure. I mean, sometimes there's protégés, but a lot of times the technique is what it is. It's there's the trained and the untrained, and he was just around the best. And through that, and always listening to Rogan's podcast, is like that's how I sort out the schools that I went to, is like find out who teaches them. Because there's a ton of jiu-jitsu schools all over the country. It's grown massively because of the UFC, because of mainly the UFC, I would imagine. And obviously Joe talks about it a lot on his podcast, but, you know, they're all around. I think I went to my first one in like 2009 or 10, and that may be, that was probably, it was probably slightly before Joe even had his podcast. I think he did start at 2009, but I wasn't listening to it, you know, steadily. Right. Though I've gone back and heard most of the originals.
Couple of classics.
But yeah, it was because of the UFC. It was because of watching the UFC. I was like, fuck yeah, I want to learn this.
Yeah,
it's
that's
a wild. Yeah, so I had to find the best people and train with them. Living in Santa Monica and in LA, we've got some incredible schools. So I train under Inato, who trained under Jean-Jacques. They're related. And and Jean-Jacques has trained Joe for like 20 years. And it's beautiful to hear like the love that they have, right? They have such compassion for each other. Yeah. They've known each other so long. And one of the coolest things that I got from this is that we have pictures of Chuck Norris, right? Like, what do you think when someone says Chuck Norris? Who is he? How good is he at martial arts? Like, what do you just assume from like his movies?
Well, the immediate thought goes to like these memes that always come out of Chuck Norris, like if Chuck Norris was in a fight with blah 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 or whatever. Yeah, I always think of martial arts movies, but I don't know. Is he really that good? You tell me. I don't know. Is he really that good? It almost seems like it was more showy than it was. Like I just never felt like if like it was Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee. I feel like Bruce Lee would smoke him. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, see that is exactly what you would think, and how I used to as well. Because like you watch Jean-Claude Van Damme, for example. I'm pretty sure he never competed as a martial artist. He was like a break dancer.
He was just like a dancer that could do the moves, I think. I mean, I think that was
something like that.
For show. I mean,
he may have had a black belt. But that is the truth. So this is what you assume. Well, what you find out about Chuck Norris is even though his movies are kind of cheesy, he was a 10 times world karate champion.
Was he? Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
he's fucking legit.
My Chuck
and
Norris
Bruce Lee had a ton of respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. But people don't look into it, do they? They don't think, oh yeah, this is something. But then you hear that when Machado was first training with his family here in like the early 90s, setting up. That's not when he was first training, but that's when he was setting up schools in and around kind of like the LA area. They couldn't afford a school. They couldn't pay for one. And saying to Joe that one day, so Chuck Norris would do movies for 6 months of the year, and then six months of the year he'd be off, and he would train jiu-jitsu obsessively. It was he knew karate, he was awesome, but he was like, I have to learn this like ground fighting. And he didn't like the drive to the school, so he basically bought them a school closer to his house.
He funded them, yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. That's cool. That's a cool story.
Well, it's fucking cool because you'd never equate Chuck Norris to being you know, a big reason why the family got to stay and jiu-jitsu thrived so much, at least in this area, and then eventually in the whole country. I mean, if it hadn't have been big in L.A., it wouldn't have been big in the whole country. So who knows how important Chuck Norris has just become in the jiu-jitsu community. Not just become, but, like, people have found out about it. It's like, wow. That's fucking wild. Yeah. What a legend. What a silly man in the sense of how cheesy his shows always were.
So cheesy.
But, like, what a real legend.
He is not the best actor. Let's just put it out there.
he seemed to struggle to improve as well. I guess he just didn't need to. They were probably like, you're fine. You're doing great.
It's true. I mean, I'm trying to think of an equivalent, but a lot of the, like, the wrestlers and stuff, a lot of them come out, and they're actually pretty good at this stuff, so I can't really think of an equivalent. But it never seemed to matter. You know, and I think he's, if you're talking about movie stars, I think he probably appeals more to a middle American man, because they see themselves in him, and they're like, oh, you know, if I had 30 years of karate and jiu-jitsu training, I could be just like Chuck Norris, because I'd have a bushy beard, and I'd wear a cowboy hat. So I think that's probably part of his appeal.
Did he have a mullet for a while too?
Oh, for sure.
I can't even think of what his show was called. I know I've seen it. Texas Ranger, right?
Well, Walker Texas Ranger, which was a favorite of my grandmother's before she passed away, God rest her soul. She'd get drunk on an old fashioned, and my mom would call her. She'd be like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm watching Walker Texas Ranger right now. Like, oh my God. Only my fucking That's family. Oh my God.
It's so good.
Yeah, so good. But he was in the Delta Force movies. Now, though, I didn't much care for Delta Force 2, but one of my favorite memories of my fucking life is when I was in high school in Tennessee, and there was threat of impending snow. We didn't know if it was going to happen or not, but it was in the radar. And, you know, we would get out for snow, because at that time in the Southeast, cold precipitation like that, it was just didn't happen very often. So when it did happen, they shut down everything because nobody was prepared for it. And so we stayed up super late watching Delta Force 1, which is like mainly kind of like it's like a plane hijacking, and they bring in Chuck Norris and his team and blah blah blah, and they hunt them down. And but it's actually a really good damn movie. I stayed up super late, and then the best thing ever was the next morning knocking my door, and my mom was like, no school today. And I'm like, yes, thank you, Chuck Norris.
Like, somehow he got the credit.
He deserves it, because he saved all those people in Delta Force 1.
Those are the best goddamn days, too, because it's just like, it really is like a gift. Like a gift. It's just like nothing to do. And you know, you don't get extra homework because of it. You don't get behind in your work. It's not like missing a day off your job when you've got deadlines, and now, oh shit, your deadline's twice as close. It's freedom.
It's total freedom. It's a gift. We don't get those in LA. We might get out for fires, and that's just not the same thing.
Nobody gets called off school here, surely. Yeah,
I mean, there's really nothing.
For what, perfect weather? Sorry, it's just like a perfect weather day. You know what they should do? They should average it throughout the country. So if, like, people in the north are getting a lot of days off for bad weather, then in the south they should get the same. Like, it should just be like, okay, well, because of the averages, you're off today, Monday, everyone hits the beach. And you're like, thanks a lot, bad weather.
Thanks so much, bad weather. I don't know. It feels like this town shuts down for rain, though. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I think,
It kind of does. Well, just everybody crashes.
Because growing up in Atlanta, when it would rain, that's when everything would get busy. That's when restaurants would get busy. That's when movie theaters would get busy. People were like, because you can't just stop your life for precipitation, because it happens so often. But if you get like a really hard one, people are like, well, we can't do anything outside, so let's go to a restaurant, or let's go to the movies, something like that. Here, rains, everybody's like, I can't go out. It's too treacherous. It's like, it's just a light drizzle. Nope. It's too dangerous. I can't do it.
Well, how pathetic does this sound? I've caught myself doing the same thing, and I'm fucking English. If we didn't do things when it rained, we wouldn't have done anything ever.
You guys would have been conquered like way more often than you have been if you guys didn't fight
immediately.
Immediately. Yeah.
We would have just said, hey, you guys coming here, is there any way you can stop the rain? And if so, you can be our new leaders.
You could just have it.
But I'd catch myself just staring out of the window when it rained. Well, two things happen here. One, when it rains in and around LA, it fucking pours.
Pours.
So it's hammering rain down. It's not just like a little drizzle. And I don't even have a car. So I'm either Ubering or getting a bike or walking, and then all of a sudden being in the rain is not worth. And then, you know, you don't have a fucking jacket either. I never wear a jacket. I don't even know if I own one. I have a hoodie, and it's like rain ready. And an umbrella is not a good investment here. Even though they're only $10, you've wasted $10. You'll never
Use with windshield wipers. My girlfriend would be like, honey, you need to replace your windshield wipers. I'm like, why? It never rains here. And this went on for 5 years.
Yeah, to blow leaves off your window.
And the first thing when I got my new car back in April, I was like, oh, I have new windshield wipers. That was the first thing.
Let me tell you,
they're great. And I got an umbrella too, but I stole that one. Kind of.
Yeah. Stolen umbrellas are worth it. That's actually the investment you should make in LA. You see one for free, take that, and then your only burden is storing it until it rains.
Exactly.
You know what's funny? When you were saying the name of that show, the Delta Force One, Chuck Norris show, I was like, are they so bad at making shows that they don't even realize you don't number the first movie?
Oh, no. It wasn't. Well, no, they didn't. I was just referring it to Delta Force One. It was actually just called Delta Force.
Right. That would have been fucking hilarious. It goes so perfectly with how cheesy it all is. They're like, we're going to make three of these movies.
We're going to share
Delta Force 1, 2, and 3. And then the first guy's like, oh, we're going to have to name it 1. Nobody even realizes.
There are producers out there dumb enough to think that, trust me.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt.
Well, you got to wonder what kind of director they would have for, like, the Texas Rangers show, for example. I mean, it was kind of like an era of, like, Rocky and Rambo movies and Bruce Willis and just complete machismo tough guys with bad acting. But there must be a point where they're like, fuck, I went to school for this. This is the least realistic, least heartfelt, most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. He's like wearing jeans and cowboy boots and scaling walls and doing
You know what is realistic?
Super kicks.
That paycheck. those student loans, those are realistic. So that's probably what they're thinking. They're like, fuck it, I'll go through the motions.
Yeah, and then drank a lot.
Tons.
Just drank a lot to deal with it.
Man, and we all do the shit job in hoping that we get the good job later. It happens. Mm. But they were probably
I'm with you, okay.
They were probably happy. They probably, you know, they got the, it was pretty easy days. You know, it's procedural shit, so it's not really hard. Easy setups. They work like, you know, like a well-oiled machine. They know what's up. They're happy.
I love the idea that he only works 6 months a year, too.
That's amazing.
That's what a beautiful way of doing it. I feel like he's a much smarter guy than people give him credit for. He seemed to have good balance. You know, and he followed. I mean, he was one of the best at something he did. No doubt that was going to make him good at other things. I guess not acting, but you know, supposedly his jiu-jitsu is on point. And again, he found the best people, the best family. Now, the Gracie family. Now, you've heard of the term Gracie jiu-jitsu, or have you just heard of jiu-jitsu?
Just heard jiu-jitsu.
What do you know, Mark?
I'm a novice.
So the Gracie family is like the most well-known. So they call it the Gracie schools. There's a ton of jiu-jitsu schools, though. And Machado, Jean-Jacques, is a Gracie. But something to do with Brazilian names, like you take like your mother's name and your father's name or something. Fuck, forgive me if you're Brazilian and or if you know this. But I should
Sorry, Brazil.
I've had it explained to me, but I forgot. I forgot how it works. But anyway, that's why he has a different name. He has the Machado name. But they're all the same family.
Okay.
And after a guy called Royce Gracie in 94 won the very first UFC, where it was the first competition, and that's what's awesome about the UFC, where they matched up all these different styles of martial arts. Dude, they had sumo. They had like this French karate kickboxing style. They had wrestlers. They had jiu-jitsu. They had all these different types of people coming in to fight. And boxers. Mm-hmm. They even had a professional boxer who did something really weird and only taped on one glove because he was expecting to be able to hold you with the other one. It was fucking so bizarre. But that nobody had figured this out before. Yeah, nobody knew what they were doing. And there were no rules, basically. You could pull hair. I'm pretty sure you could punch to the groin. It was fucking nuts.
Ooh.
And they all went at each other. And this family called Gracie came in. And they didn't even pick their toughest guys. They actually picked one of their youngest sons, Hoyce Gracie, who weighed like 170 pounds. Uh-huh. And they put him in. And the reason they did that is because they wanted to show that we don't even have to put in our toughest guys. We can put in our smallest brother, and he will be all of you. And it's exactly what he did. And no one could figure it out. Dude, it was mind-blowing. I was, I think, 14 at the time. And I remember seeing it. I didn't see it live, but I heard it after the fact, and I was able to get a hold of a tape. And I remember watching, just going, that's unbelievable. This is like, even though he didn't fight like a Bruce Lee, it was like a movie unfolding, because it was so unbelievable what he was doing to these people. Just no matter what they did, tangle them up and destroy them. It was,
yeah.
It's wild, because things like that don't really happen. You know, they don't. They
right.
don't really happen. It's rare in sports, and it's definitely rare in fighting, because it's like, well, you can just be bigger or stronger or do more steroids. Not with this guy, you can't. It
right.
wouldn't have mattered. I think there was a dude called Kimo or Kimbo or something, and I'm not talking about Kimbo Slice, but a dude way back in the day. He uh-huh. was this giant, I think, Hawaiian wrestler. Dude, this guy was massive, like power lifter big. And a wrestler, so just could crush you. And Hoyce Gracie just got a hold of his, like, bun ponytail,
uh-huh.
pulled the shit out of it,
right.
and I think just got him in an armbar, pulled it, and won. And everyone was like, no one can beat this human being. That
Holy
is,
shit.
He weighed 170 pounds, dude. What do you weigh?
I'm 210.
Yeah, right? 40 pounds.
Yeah.
I think the chemo guy was, like, 280. He was over, I think, over 100 pounds heavier than Hoyce. And
just,
skilled fighter. And
just goes to
fucked.
Show you, man. You don't know. You never know.
Well, it's the trained and the untrained, but it also highlights how beautiful this art is. You
mm-hmm.
know, and I don't want to, like, go too much on about it, because people that are Rogan fans have to put up with him doing it too. But I really do put it out there to anybody that has not tried it to give it a shot. Like, just to go over, see what it is. It doesn't matter how clumsy and goofy and small and uncoordinated you are. You'll do it long enough to where you will get good. You will. And
yeah.
you'll love the people over there. It's a family that honestly just beats the shit out of each other all the time.
I love martial arts families.
Yeah.
And there's the level of respect there is really good, too. You can always tell.
Yeah. It's awesome. What I liked about, even within their own community, they had I think his cousin was called Hickson Gracie, and
mm-hmm.
Hickson was always known as being the biggest and the strongest, right? And Hickson's cool because he does all like advanced breathing techniques and all this yoga stuff. And there's like videos of him online, like he can breathe with his abdomen and just like suck it in, move it
uh-huh.
sideways, do all this weird shit. Like, it's very
right,
strange.
Right, of course, yeah.
He's like a bit of a hippie. And breathing is a huge part of really any fighting, and especially jiu-jitsu, because you panic and you forget to take good breaths. But Jean-Jacques was saying that Hickson would go to a school where a lot of high-level black belts are, and he was so good, he could let them start in any position they wanted. And we're talking even like sinking in deep rear naked chokes, which is like a completely dead position. You're fucked. If you're in that, you're fucked.
Uh-huh.
And he would not only get out of it, but he would then submit them by putting them in the position that they started in.
No shit. You know, sometimes
yeah.
there's just, you meet somebody that's the best at something. Like,
yeah.
that's just kind of what that is. It's like, at a certain point, he's like, well, then he's the best. That's just how it is.
They just happened to be, you know, this like knowledge was given to this Gracie family, to their like grandfather, I think, by this Japanese jiu-jitsu practitioner. And then the Gracies adjusted it in Brazil so that it worked better for their style of fighting. And it just happened to have been given to a family that was like incredibly inept at doing this. Imagine if it was given to a family that just wasn't quite as athletic.
Exactly.
I mean, it would have never taken off. It would have never blown up.
It makes you wonder. It makes you wonder how many of those would be out there that just will never know it. Like, is there something you and I are really good at that we just don't know about? It's clearly not podcasting, but... But is there something...
What
like,
is it?
If we decided
maybe
to become
we're the
pilots,
world's best... Yeah. The world's best basket weavers.
Exactly. That looks therapeutic.
It might be.
It makes me wonder. It makes me wonder. But oh well, too late.
Well, is it that everyone is... Look, people definitely have strengths in any area. And they always used to say that to you kind of growing up. Like, find what you're good at and go do it. Or find what you love and hopefully it's the same thing.
Exactly. Well, that's what I've done. That's what, much to the chagrin of my parents. But, oh, the arts? Oh, God, why?
Well, I started with what I was good at. I was good academically.
Yeah, you did.
I liked being in school. I liked college, believe it or not. Well, because it was not having a real job. So,
I loved college.
And I was good at it. And I liked tutoring and helping others. But when I got done with it, I was like, oh, I don't want to do the jobs that are connected to this degree.
Exactly.
Shit. So I had to make a sharp change.
Yeah, no.
So now it's just passion. And now it's just things I like to do, regardless of how good I am at them. Hopefully you get better, right?
Shit. I mean, at the end of the day, make yourself happy. Damn.
Can you ever say that you're good at stand-up, too? Like, you can do yourself to pump yourself up, but I think when you're around other comedians... I think the rule is you just never do it. You're like, no, I still suck, but here I am on this show.
I don't even talk about stand-up in terms of, like, good or bad. I like to talk about stand-up in terms of, like, oh, this joke worked, or this joke is strong, or this bit worked, and feel good about that. But I don't like to say, I would never say I'm a good stand-up. Like in public. I'll say it when I'm complaining to my girlfriend and I get a shit spot in one of my shows with a lousy comedian in front of me. I'm like, God, I'm way stronger than them. The fuck? But that's another conversation.
But that's really what it is, though. It is just the bit. Is the bit good? Is the
consistently
section of it good? Was the crowd good that night? I mean, because I think if you say that, if you just straight up say to yourself, I'm good at comedy, the day you get that just blowout, dead, completely bombed, you know, eating a plate of dicks set.
Absolutely.
Then you have to be like, oh, shit, I suck at this.
But I don't approach stand-up.
It's more depressing if you have that.
Yeah. I don't approach stand-up comedy the way a lot of comics do. I look at it as if it's like a performance. Like, no different than Broadway or, you know, West End or regional theater or anything like that. That's how I approach it. Like, I have my script that I'm so familiar with that I can go off topic, change a joke here, change a joke there, change the delivery or whatever. But I don't think of it in terms of like a lot of comics do. I like to go at it like, because I'm a writer primarily. I like to write comedy. And so then it's a performance. So it's scripted for me. And I'm like, ooh. And it's testing out a joke. Did that land? Do I need to change the cadence? Do I need to change the inflection? Do I need to change the rhythm or the organization? Things like that. So I approach it from a technical standpoint. And then with the preparedness, I feel like the art takes over and the enjoyment and the passion and all that. So I know a lot of comics approach it in a very different way, but I'm almost scientific in a way about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. Like, you take everything that they were talking about jiu-jitsu, and it was one thing they didn't really hit on in their conversation is how much you should practice. It was just taken for granted, the fact that because he taught it, he did it multiple times a week. But he was trying to get Joe back at the end because Joe had an injury. And he's like, you got to come back, train. You got to come back. That was as close as they got. But the key there, and it's the same with the stand-up, is like, you've got to do it. If not every day, every other day. It's got to be all the time. Because it's a blade that gets dull quick.
Oh, big time. You got to be. Yeah. I mean, I know my set like the back of my hand, and I still rehearse it like crazy. Like always. Always.
Yeah. And that's super important.
It does, because it doesn't just come right back. It's not like riding a bike. You have to be in the rhythm for it. Have to be in the rhythm for it, and that's super important. My old acting coach always used to say, do it 250 times. Didn't matter whether it was a scene or a monologue or stand-up or a song or anything. 250 times. He goes, at that point, you know it so well, it's the back of your hand, and then you can really start to work on it, rehearse it, play with it. And I think that's important. It amazes me when some comics come up and they bring their paper with them. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, this is a performance. Yeah. This is not an audition.
Yeah, I've done that twice. I've done that twice. One time, I wrote it that day, and I was like, I just cannot remember. Like, there were two transitions I couldn't remember, and it just kept falling out. So I brought it so I could like have it there, and I ended up not needing it. And then the other time was that show that we did. Because it was three times longer of a set almost than I'd ever done. I'd only done 3 minutes. Well, so then the first time you ever go through the whole thing in front of an audience is at a show that you're recording and you invited everyone to. I was like, this is a bad plan if I don't have something up here with me.
I was at Comedy Store last time I was there. This girl, I can't remember her name. She's perfectly delightful. She brought her paper up on stage, and I was like, girl, you're the Comedy Store. Like, what are you doing? And she didn't pay attention to the line. She got played off. I felt horrible. Felt terrible. Oh, that was really painful. Like, got played
That's
off.
That's not a place you want to do that.
No. I've That's never seen somebody played off that. There before, ever. Though I'm That's sure it's incredible. Happened, but I've never seen it. I've been doing it in 19
Was that ago. On... What show was that on?
That was the D's Nuts show on Fridays.
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
God. Poor fucker. Well, again, practice. Practice makes perfect.
Practice,
but
practice,
look,
practice.
With this episode, and for anyone maybe people aren't that into jiu-jitsu and didn't want to hear it, but for me, this was a special episode that I've been waiting for a very long time, and I couldn't have loved it more. And if you're interested at all in understanding more about jiu-jitsu and what it can do for you, and it's way more than just the fighting component. Like, it's not even why I do it. I do it because it's hard, because I don't really care to go to the gym and work out, so I get to do this.
Right.
And it's more intense, and it just gives you so much confidence, and the people there are so cool. They're like, they really become your family, even if you're a little socially awkward. Like, you don't have to be the popular type of tough guy. Nothing. You just go there, and eventually you keep working, people will respect you. So I loved it. So definitely check this one out. Now, next, in line with Mark's comedy and Mark's impressions, and Mark has an excellent bit where he does a Bernie Sanders impression, and it's fantastic. We have the man, Bernie Sanders, podcast 1330. I do have to say that it's kind of crazy now that Joe's podcast is so big that if you want to become the president of the U.S., you go on it.
You're going on a show. That was a good.
And this isn't just a late night spot. This isn't just like, oh, you're on Fallon for
5 minutes.
Nobody learns anything. This is true.
Well, they talk about that on the podcast. How
it was only an hour, though, I think. So it was a short one.
It was only an hour.
A long fucking time for Bernie Sanders to be talking to someone who can ask him pretty much any question he wants.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and this to me was very interesting. His girlfriend and I were talking about it. And how I said, Joe is like a microcosm, I think, of what a normal American really is. Like, he likes hunting. He likes fighting, jiu-jitsu, UFC. He has his hobbies that are very, quote-unquote, American. And you, if you look at Joe Rogan, my first thought would be, probably kind of a man's man, conservative dude, kind of likes the way things are. But then you get to talking to him, and there are some really progressive things that are coming out of his mouth. And I don't think he thinks of them as progressive. I think he thinks of them as common sense. I don't even think he puts a label on it. You know, the idea that we treat immigrants humanely, that's not a crazy idea to him. The idea that people should have access to health care, he's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, why is that such a controversial thing? Even talking about, like, climate change and, you know, moving away from fossil fuels to renewable energy. And he's like, yeah, that seems pretty common sense. It seems like a pretty sensible idea. And I feel like it's interesting to look at him because he goes beyond the identity of political affiliation. And when you actually ask him about his thoughts on things, he is what most people would assume are quote unquote left of center. But really, I mean, for him, it just seems like common sense. He's like, I don't even know why this would be considered that left of center. I mean, like, why should people go bankrupt because they get sick? Like, what the hell? Why should people be crippled by student loan debt? Because, you know, we were told everybody gets an education, and then they go out and they're crippled by debt, and you can't even get rid of it in bankruptcy, you know, no matter what
happens.
That's
a nightmare.
Yeah, it's an absolute nightmare. And I think he was, and Joe, it's really interesting because he puts a real reasonable voice to these things that you're not that crazy. I talk with my mom about that all the time. He's like, well, he's so radical, and this is so radical, not about Joe, but like Bernie or Elizabeth Warren or anybody on that side. I'm like, they've been given that label. They've been given that label of aggressive or radical or super liberal or communist or socialist or whatever. But if you actually poll people on specific issues, they're a lot more left than what most people would consider themselves to be, because they actually just consider it to be common sense. And then Joe follows up with the most common question of, well, how do you pay for it? Which is also a very sensible question. And I actually think one of my favorite things is that Bernie answered that, I think, pretty succinctly. And I wish people, and even just an hour, even though that doesn't seem like a lot of time, that's like an eon in political news cycle. And he was actually able to articulate things that I just loved it. And I think it was a great platform for it.
They seem to see eye to eye on a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, people, I obviously, you know, we're listening to a lot of Joe. So, he's always seemed very, mostly liberal to me. You know,
yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Because I've always heard him say about the healthcare thing and then, you know, abortion rights. And he just, other than in his hunting, is fairly new. So a lot of people see him now and they're like, well, he's a hunter. And then he's also in the last like 5 years, because of his testosterone replacement, just beefed himself up to where he just looks even more douchebaggy than he ever did before. And I don't know why. It just kind of all falls into this like American flag wearing hunting. He must be a Republican, but like you said, he just picks things he likes. He does that. Also the fighting, I guess, the UFC stuff.
Yeah.
It's easy to assume.
But,
he's been in Hollywood for 20 years. He's definitely a liberal dude. He's not fake liberal like many actors will be.
No, exactly.
You know? Well, I'm not saying maybe they're not fake, but they're just like overdoing it, I think. But he believes it. He's like, look, scientists talk about climate change. It's fucking probably real. Like, we should pay attention to this shit. And why aren't people talking about it? And it was cool to have that conversation with Bernie, because I'd not ever really paid a lot of attention to what
I know
Bernie
you have. You're not
doing
a big political guy.
It stresses me out, man.
I get just it. It stresses me out too. And I don't get away
but
from
But you
it.
Gotta know. That's... But yeah, I outsource it to you. You tell me.
Right, exactly. I like to be informed. You know? I like to be informed.
It's good, yeah. But I like to be informed about shit that doesn't stress me out.
That I get. That
you know?
I get.
I'll read an article on, like, how a fucking nuclear engine works before I like just read the next blah blah argument in you know,
well,
what's going on in Congress.
And you
just
are
like,
not
that
alone.
Seems like, who cares?
Yeah, you're not alone in how you feel about that either, because first of all, it's not just stress, doesn't just stress people out, but people are sick of it because it's all the best word to describe it is bullshit. But really, you have a bunch of inauthentic people saying inauthentic things because they think that's what people want to hear. And people have listened to bullshit for so long that most people just zone out. This whole idea of like focus testing answers and blah, 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 blah. When somebody just comes along, like a Bernie Sanders, and just kind of says what they feel, and they're like, fuck it, I don't care what you think, but I'm going to make my argument. But, you know, and you can paint me as this, or you can paint me as that, but this is who I am, and you know I believe it, and I make an intelligent argument for it. You might disagree with the argument, but you can't disagree that I make an intelligent one for my issues. I think people prick up, and they listen. I think that's why he was so popular 3-4 years ago when he was running against Hillary. There was a lot of people that were like, huh, I like what this guy's saying, and I think he really believes it. I don't think he's selling me he's not selling me a used fucking car. I think he really believes in this product, you know, as it were. You know what I mean?
Do you think that he's going to be able to do any... Okay, so we've had Trump now for how many? It'd be 4 years by the time...
It's been 1 million
they
years.
Run against each other, and then... Yeah, right. you've got that happening... Right, him, and we've seen what he's done, for mm-hmm. good or bad, and the people that follow him. Do you think that those people are annoyed with him? Like, has he gained popularity?
Trump?
Yeah. Within his own group, within his own group.
I think
fucking hate his guts.
Based on what polling I've seen, he's pretty much just stayed... It's been kind of like a flat line. It'll blip every now and then, but the people that loved him before love him now. The people that hated him before hate him now. And the people that were like, fuck it, let's give it a shot, they're the ones that are more like, nah, I don't like this guy. This was a really bad idea. I shouldn't have done this. That's my
unofficial
reading. I
wondered if the people that... Yeah, you know, you would know it. I mean,
yeah.
I thought that the people that hated him would learn to hate him more if...
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, assuming that he was going to become the way that they were at least talking, like, he's this buffoon, he's going to fuck everything up, blah, blah, blah. That would mm-hmm. enrage you over 4 years. And then since
right.
it was so close before, that would be all the energy you need to, you know, flip him and get someone else in. Because, like, imagine if you didn't like him before but were too lazy to vote. Well, now you
right.
hate
and
him.
Now you're
so you're definitely
motivated.
Voting. And you're also considering... working on the campaign or handing out some flyers or starting a conversation.
The crazy thing about our ridiculous country is we have this thing called the Electoral College. I'm sure you're familiar with it. And it really comes down to a certain group of states. So, I mean, to be perfectly honest, Wisconsin and Florida kind of have the fate of the world in their hands, if we're going to be real about it. Because you need those because... Democrats must win Wisconsin to win the whole thing. If they can take Florida, that's even better. It would probably go Trump because you got a bunch of shit kickers down there. No offense to anybody listening in Florida. But it's really going to come down to that. So if it were a nationwide popular vote, he probably loses by around 5 million, to be perfectly honest. He lost by 3 million in the last election. And that was with everything going on top of it, with Russian interference, with James Comey releasing... You know, that memo that Hillary Clinton was back under investigation with her ineptitude. And you know, I know there's a lot of Hillary Clinton fans out there, but she was a bad, flawed candidate. She ran a flawed campaign, cocky, arrogant, and add that up with everything else. She still won the popular vote by 3 million votes.
That's
but it
a
doesn't,
lot.
Doesn't fucking matter because you got to win Wisconsin. She lost Wisconsin by like... I don't know, between 10,000, 70,000 votes. I think it was around 10,000. I think she lost Pennsylvania by 70,000 votes. She lost Wisconsin by about 10,000 votes. 10,000 votes! 10,000 votes that if Democrats don't pick him up, another million years of Trump.
Yeah. So
in terms of his popularity,
you say that it's just these two states, it's because the how many? It's that all the other states are like they're gonna be what they're gonna be.
Probably. I mean, you saw in the midterms the mean return to normal, which means that Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin at the midterms kind of went back to blue, to the old Obama numbers, essentially. So you saw, you know, governorships, Senate seats, congressional races, all kind of like trended back to where they normally were, which was to the left, to Democrats. And if you go by just a normal map, blue and red, it should slightly favor Democrats because of just the blue states you have versus the red states you have, mainly because Democrats get New York and California, and that just that helps a shit ton. So you're seeing that, but then Wisconsin has been trending a little red over the last decade, especially in local politics. So you're seeing that. So that's kind of your dicey thing. Everybody kind of feels like Pennsylvania and Michigan are back to the mean, which means they're back to blue. Everybody that took a chance on this shit or didn't go home, they're coming back or they're voting blue. But Wisconsin is kind of the big red card, and then or the big wild card, as it is. And then Florida's always been a wild card. It usually goes 51-49. Both ways. You never really know. It's a huge swing state. It's been trending a little more red lately, but, you know, Obama won it. He won it at least once. He might have won it twice. So it's one of those things, but it really comes down to those two states. Because I am, and that's just assuming Ohio goes red, although I don't know for sure. The, you know, Ohio's been hit pretty hard by the Dayton shooting. They've been hit hard, you know, economically. I mean, it has not been good for them during the Trump administration. And it's been trending red, but there might be a lot of disaffected voters there that don't like what's happening in their state.
So for sure.
You can talk about jiu-jitsu, and
now
I'll talk about politics.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. You have become the Joe Rogan Experience Review political analyst from now on.
Yeah,
this is
pretty
great.
Much. I mean, I love this shit.
Well, it's good because I don't follow it. And I think in a lazy way, maybe. I represent, and listen, it's not just because, oh, I'm English, I don't give a fuck about America. Not true.
No,
I've been here
not.
24 years. I have a citizenship. When I was in high school here, I followed a lot of political stuff. I had for a decade past that. And then there just became a point where I was like, this stresses me out too much. I'm reading too much of it. I'm too focused on it. I want to do something else.
You are absolutely not in the minority there. I think most people feel that way about it, or they're disengaged, and they know, I'm like, I got to make a decision once every 4 years or once every 2 years. I was talking to a buddy of mine, and we were talking about who our preferred candidates are, who do we think could win, who do we think could beat Trump, blah, 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 blah. And he said, do you know, to be perfectly honest, I want someone that lets me not think about this shit for one goddamn minute. And I was like, yeah, you're fucking A right. It's like, I'm sick of living in this world where I feel like I have to be constantly engaged because I want to know what's going on and I want to know how to battle this, even if it's in my own mind, you know what I mean? And I would love if just somebody would come along and be like, here's my platform. Like, if it was Burning, it's like, my platform is you're not going to have to think about it. Like, at all. And I think that would be really fucking, it's like, for 4 years, you're just going to go to work and things are going to be better. I think that would be amazing. I would love
that. Would
that.
Be
I would
great.
Fucking love this. Like, that's my platform. You don't have to worry about it. Or the platform of, like, Bernie Sanders 2020, I got this. Like, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I think a lot of people feel that way. It's like, Christ Jesus, can I just go to my work without wondering whether or not some shit is going to go down with another country, or people's lives are going to be ruined, or for a multitude of reasons? Like, why can't things just be a little better? You know, nobody's asking for easy, but it wouldn't be so bad if things were just a little less hard. You know what I mean?
Is it that you just don't trust who's in power and what's happening? And it's and then you're like, partially you're like, well, I need to take a little bit of this responsibility on myself.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm kind of a control freak, so that's part of it too. And I like to know things. Yeah. And this stuff, I mean, I've always been fascinated by government and politics ever since I was a kid. Like, I did this open book, I'll never forget, it was in government class in high school. We had this open book constitution test. I didn't use the book. I was done in 20 minutes. I handed it into the teacher, and he gave me this look like, oh, you didn't even try on this, or, you know, oh, you didn't even study, and you're like, you've just given up. And I was like, nope. And he came back, and he was like, this is the first person to ever get 100% on this test, ever, and the entire time I've ever taught this class. And he handed it, and he did it in like 20 minutes, because I was like, because I know this shit, son, I love it. I always have. I've always been fascinated. Nah. I almost went to law school with the idea of getting into politics. I almost did.
Wow.
But then I decided, why? Money, that seems like too much fun. I'll just become an artist instead.
Yeah, let's be broke and have a podcast.
Yeah. And, you know, it's worked out well so far.
I love that he talked about legalizing marijuana and then sorting out the prison systems as well.
Yeah, me too.
Like, he didn't say anything to me when I was listening that I was like, no, that's fucked up. That's a stupid thing. Like, yeah. I liked hearing all of it. And it was all very compassionate and seems very doable. And even when done, I don't think it would be a bad thing. Like, listen, if you legalize marijuana federally, then yep. There's no more illegal marijuana growing.
Exactly.
It would be unnecessary to do it.
There wouldn't be any more
cartel weed. Yeah, it would be like no more weed being brought into the country. The cartels mm-hmm. could just focus on cocaine and the other shit that we haven't legalized yet.
Yeah.
And now it's everywhere and the stigma's completely gone. You could fly with it. You can be on a plane. Everyone's on edibles. It's
exactly.
That one to me, and I, you know, obviously I smoke a lot of weed, so I'm a huge advocate for it. But
right.
I do feel like, all right, you could sit down with a psychiatrist or a psychologist and talk about all the shit that's fucked up in your life. Re-examine, mm-hmm. look into the past, realize what you're doing, why you're lying all the time, why you cheat, why you steal, all these things. Or you could just get on a solid regimen of smoking weed and deal with that paranoia yourself by reflecting and being like, oh, I'm fucking up, and then change it in a slightly good way. I mean, it's the only drug that I would want people to abuse in the sense of being addicted to that would have a positive reflection on society. Though saying that, maybe Adderall could do that too, even though it's not great for you. But if you pump everyone up with energy, they get more shit done. But the marijuana one is better. It's making people nicer. It's not like you want to make everyone in the country an alcoholic. That would be terrible.
Exactly. That would be shit. Half the country's
yeah, and
he
said he could do it with a presidential, what did he call it, order?
Like, well, he could definitely direct the DOJ to stop enforcing or federal marijuana laws.
Think he said with like a presidential order, he could federal.
Here's the problem with that, and I like that as a stopgap measure. But the problem with that is the next guy can come in and undo that, and then you're back to square one. Well, that's the problem.
But hold on, potentially he has 8 years to run yeah. that simulation, you know, to
exactly.
see that here's what's going to happen. They're going to start making so much tax revenue in every state from it, like all the states
totally.
That have legalized it, Colorado, California.
Colorado and California.
There's no way that a state's going to go back on it. They're going to be like, listen, dude, I understand that you're running on a platform of no drugs and you want to be conservative, but
totally.
We can afford to buy so much more shit now. And it's not
mm-hmm.
really causing any problems. So it'll win out itself. It'll be too powerful once they open the floodgates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's going to be it. It's a tax that you don't go back on. You're like free money, baby.
It's true. No, it's on its way anyway. It's on its way. It's going to happen. It may not happen in the next few years, but it's within the next 10 to 20. That's a done deal. Like, just... It's like anything else. It's like gay marriage or anything else that I could think. I can't think of another example right now, but it's like you can see the way the wind is blowing. It's the cards are on the table.
Yeah, but it's
going
it's different
that
than that. An abortion, and didn't they just tighten abortion laws in like Alabama or Tennessee?
Oh yeah.
Some
yeah.
states
no,
go
like,
back and forth on things.
Oh yeah, but no, I mean, was talking more about like gay marriage and things like that. I mean, how you could see just publicly that was trending in a way that like this was going to become how it is eventually. Like because too much of the country was like accepting of it and encouraging of it. And
true,
abortion has always been that. There's always been that 50-50 thing. There's always, you know, we got a lot of religious people in this country. And that's always been a contentious issue. But gay marriage, not as much. Weed, definitely not as much.
Yeah,
you know,
and it, this want to move faster because there's so much money behind
well,
it.
Well, there's so much money to be made.
Yeah,
so
all the cartel money now goes to the government. They become
yeah.
the new cartel and nobody gets killed because of it.
I know.
It's like,
let's fund healthcare with
let's
it.
Let's fucking do it.
Let's fund healthcare with
yeah.
it.
Or let's use it for a medicine and
yeah,
have
that
be actually scientifically stated.
And the,
all
the
right.
effects, yeah, the effects of hemp are
yeah.
huge too. Like we should embrace, not push away.
Mm. It's funny. I recently have been taking a lot of the hemp oil extract.
I
moved away
have,
from
yeah.
like the CBD stuff that I was taking and I'll take a bunch of that. It's very good for anxiety.
You love
I
it.
Think personally for me at least it seems to be better than taking CBD for anxiety. I can't tell for inflammation, but you take a lot more milligrams of the hemp oil extract. But what's cool about that one was always fucking legal. Crazy.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did I not even know about this?
Isn't
I'm an advocate
nuts?
Of it. I've not heard people talk about the hemp oil extract. It's always THC and the CBD.
I know,
like,
because
hemp oil extract's non-psychoactive. I'm like, trust me, dude, you feel very relaxed, very chilled.
Yep.
Take mm-hmm. enough of that, you are just floating through your day. But you know, you're cognizant, you can think, you can force conflict. It's not like you're a pushover. It's very, yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
Lots of nutrition in that. Okay, so that was my political end of it, was the marijuana. Of course, I was going to jump
on that. Of
course. But I liked a lot of this.
That's personal
I really
to you,
did.
So that makes sense.
I got a lot out of this, and I'm really impressed with how he was talking, and we're going to see how well he does. You think he's going to be the front runner?
No.
It's got to be, right?
I don't.
No?
I don't think he will be. I think, I think there's two things going against him. His age, unfortunately, is one of them. The second is he...
Is he older than Trump?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, shit.
He's, I think he's 78. I'm not positive, but I think he's 78.
Oh, my God. Really? Fuck,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. 77, 78, something like that.
Yeah,
the second
that's not
is he
ideal.
Identifies as a Democratic Socialist, which... To me, while that's fine to feel that way, it's horrible branding because this country has some goddamn bug up its ass about socialism, quote unquote socialism. Even though we have so many government programs already, we have socialist programs, but that goes back to identity, how Americans feel about their country, how they want to feel that they are represented by their country, and this, we've always had this goddamn thing of, you know, democracy and capitalism, and socialism flies in the face of that, so that flies in the face of that identity, and I think too many voters, even in the primary, are going to be trepidatious about that, because they think it'll turn too many people off. I'm thrilled to be wrong. I really do. I really would be. But I think you'll see that and his age ends up being a drawback. Personally.
Yeah. Well,
but we'll see.
Fuck.
I mean, he did.
On that note,
yeah,
it's that we'll see. But that's a shame. It is a shame he's not 20 years younger, or there's a younger version of him that is picking up the same momentum and speed and
oh, there
know.
Is. There is. Her name's Elizabeth Warren.
Tulsi Gabbard?
No, Elizabeth Warren. Keep an eye out.
Oh. Pocahontas.
Yeah, but there's very little daylight between the two of them. If you really, I mean, if you sit down and listen, there's not much daylight between the two of them. It's how they approach.
Well, hopefully she goes on Rogan. I don't think she hasn't before.
I think she'd
maybe
be great
she could
on
get
Rogan,
on there,
and I think he'd fucking
hit,
love her. I think he'd love her.
Yeah, we'll find out. We need these conversations, though. We need to find out who these people are before they even start. So
it's important.
That's how to do it. I mean, it would have been cool to have got Trump on before he became president. He wouldn't do it now, but I'm sure he would have done it beforehand. I think
yeah, he'd do anything.
Like, oh my God, is he out
he'd
of his
do
mind
anything for attention.
Not?
Yeah. Anything.
It was a great episode. This is definitely worth listening to. Even if you're not into politics, which I just generally am not. But I really do think that it gives you an idea of what you believe in compared to what the candidates do, and that helps you decide. Like, are you voting one way just because your parents did and your friends do, or do you really think that? You
right.
know, what do you really care about? I think that that's cool. And thank you to our new political analyst, Mark, who
woohoo!
You know way more about this shit than I was expecting. This was fucking brilliant for me to learn. This was like going to political class. Cheers, bud. quick shout out also, it's Joe's birthday in a couple of days. 2 days. So happy
right
birthday
on.
To Joe Rogan on August 11th.
Send
him
Joe
some
Rogan.
Flowers. And thanks for downloading as always. This one was a big political one, so people are going to have some real energy behind what was
They're
said and what
feelings.
Was thought. Yeah, send us some comments.
Come
our
at us,
Instagram
bro.
Is the Joe Rogan Experience Review. Message us there. Let us know what you think. If you think Mark was correct or wrong about anything, hit us up. Same with me with jiu-jitsu. Any big jiu-jitsu fans out there, if you thought what I said was smart or dumb or stupid or brilliant, let us know. It's always cool to hear back from people, and we've been getting quite a bit of fan mail. So, we're just trying to hone this and make it better. So.
Yeah, we're just making it better. And if you do disagree with me, it's totally fine. My mother does too, so... So I'm ready to go.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Bye.
Later.